Part 18, Chapter 2. The big marine attack plane landed in the night near the branch mine. It was still deserted. The rain still came down. But there were quarreling sounds of animals over where the skirmish had been fought. The snarls and spits of angry leopards, the shattering barks of some other beast, the eerie, cackling laughter of yet another predator. They were fighting over the bodies of the dead. The flatbed with the flying platform and blast mortar was where it had been prepared, just inside the hangar door. There was no sign that the other flatbed had returned in retreat. It must still be following the convoy. Johnny looked through the deserted compound again. The lights were still on. The distant mine pumps still pounded away. Unless disturbed by some outside force, all such machinery would probably continue to run for decades. The planetary traffic printer was still sitting there spewing out paper that recorded current traffic. Johnny glanced through it.
McIver, can you please bring extra fuel to Moscow? This is the traffic controller at Johannesburg. Are there any planes en route this way? If not, I can close down for the night. Isaac, please come in, Isaac. Listen, Isaac, were there any serviceable ore freighters left in the Grozny mine site? And can they be converted for passengers? Please let me know by morning. We're a wee bit shy of carriers right now. Lundy, we're canceling you on the Tibet run. We need you and your co-pilot back here to help with an airlift. Please acknowledge, laddie.
Most of it in the pilot jargon of Cyclo. It struck Johnny that this stream of messages would give an attacker a pretty good idea of what areas were actively operating. It was almost a catalog of targets for Mark 32s. If the convoy got through and these Cyclos mounted an overall attack, they could take back the planet. He wondered whether he shouldn't put out a general call on this set and order a 72-hour radio silence. But no, the damage was done. These same messages were probably reeling out of the Lake Victoria mine site printer, too. And any transmission he made here might be picked up by the convoy, alerting it. Well, he would just have to succeed with the attack on the convoy. That was all. He walked back through the empty, echoing levels. The Cyclos, he noticed, had mainly stripped the place of armament. They were leaving no blast guns or portable weapons behind to fall into Briganti hands. Lucky they'd overlooked the mortars in their haste. The flatbed was out of the hangar now, waiting in the dark yard. Johnny shut the doors of the compound. No use letting in the leopards and elephants and snakes. He went back to the big plane and did a rapid review of the actions that were about to occur. He told them to fly in very low indeed, hugging ground, from way over to the east and come in behind the ambush point. He didn't want that plane on convoy tank screens. Then, deploy along this ridge. This one here that flanked the road. And when the convoy was well into the ravine, give them a flanking fire. What if they turned around and started back? Well, he'd be back there with a mortar on the flying platform to keep them from retreating.
What?
An incredulous Robert the Fox was saying.
One mortar against tanks? That's impossible.
The convoy would be able to get back into the forest, and they'd never get them out. Oh, you want this plane to take off and help block that. Well, that's all right. It is a battle plane.
Just try to roll the tanks and trucks over without exploding them,
said Johnny.
Use no radiation bullets, just blast gun force. Keep your weapons on broad blast, no flame, and stun. We don't want to kill them. As soon as they're all strung out along this ravine, block the road from the ambush. I'll block it from the rear. The rest of you, flank it from the ridge. This battle plane is to help if they get loose and head back toward the forest. Right?
Right.
A coordinator tried unsuccessfully to make up for the absence of the Russian coordinator, who was now with Ivan, and then said,
I'll make sure the Russian coordinator explains it when we get to the others. Oh, I've got it straight. I can tell them then.
Remember, there's a slim possibility that Allison is in that convoy. so keep your eye out for him. And if he gets away in the fight, don't shoot him.
Right, right, right.
And they'd get it explained to these Russians here when they caught up with Ivan.
Smooth,
said Robert the Fox.
Oh, so very smooth. The bulk of our force can't be briefed because the translator is elsewhere. What stupendous planning and coordination. I was just luck. We will need it.
But we've got the cyclos outnumbered.
What?
Exclaimed Robert the Fox.
There's more than 100 of them and only 50 or so of us.
That's what I mean. We've got them outnumbered, 1/2 to 1.
They got it. And some Russians more advanced in English than the rest explained the joke to the other Russians. They all laughed. The rain had been getting them down. They felt better. Johnny was getting down to the flatbed where a Scot and 4 Russians, one of them a driver, waited, when a scurry in the plane drew his attention. It was Bitty McLeod, all set to go with him, draped around with equipment. This was something Johnny did not want. The coming battle was nothing to drag the boy into. But there was a problem. The boy's pride. Johnny thought fast. This was almost harder to solve than the tactics. Bitty's world was filled with the romances of 2,000 years ago, when knighthood was in flower, with flame-breathing dragons and pure knights and rescued fair damsels. Nothing wrong with that. He was a sweet little boy, and his greatest ambition was to grow up and become a man like Dunaldin or himself. Nothing wrong with that either. But his dreams risked bruising against the brutal realities of this world in which they fought, a world with its own brand of dragons. He would never live to become like Prince Dunaldin or Sir Johnny if he were not protected. But there was his pride. And it was showing now when he saw Johnny's pause, saw the search for an excuse to say no in Johnny's ice-blue eyes. Hurriedly, Johnny grabbed a mine radio from a seat and thrust it into the boy's hands. Johnny tapped the one in his own belt. He leaned very close to Biddy's ear and whispered,
I need a reliable contact on this plane who can tell me, after the battle is joined, if anything is going wrong. Don't use it until the first shot is fired. But if there's anything amiss after that, you tell me fast.
He put a finger to his lips. Bitty was instantly bright, if a trifle conspiratorial. He nodded.
Oh, yes, Sir Johnny.
And he faded back into the plane. Johnny hobbled down the squishy road to the flatbed. It was sitting there, lights stabbing through the sheets of rain. He checked his crew, got in, and nodded to the driver. The flatbed, with its flying mine platform and mortar, roared, drowning out the snarling fight over in the woods. They were off in a truck to do combat with tanks.